SCP-8822, Alethophobia, Headcanon. Alethophobia is a fear or dislike of the truth, and individuals that suffer from this might deny or distort facts in order to avoid confronting the truth. Humans tend to share some qualities of this in general, promoting an interest in seeking out the truth across all things, until the truth disagrees with what we think it should be. SCP-8822 is about a distortion of the truth, and a distortion of reality in general, as some researchers go on a very mild-mannered trip to investigate some anomalous stone heads. What they find is far from mild-mannered, however, even if they struggle to realize it. I'll note that this article's presentation makes it a bit tricky to present, and I highly recommend reading this one for yourself if you have the opportunity. With that, let's take a look. SCP-8822 is a set of four hand-carved stone heads, designated 8822-1 through 4. Specific details vary per head, with some being made of marble and some of limestone. Some are detailed enough to plausibly be portraits of real people, and some are not. All of them are highly weathered, but some more so than others. One or more of the four stone heads changes descriptions of itself to be inaccurate, but it's not clear at this time which specifically. Regardless, non-specific descriptions of the full set of heads appear to be safe from the effect, and so all of the heads are to be treated identically and interaction is to be minimized. The heads were recovered from a shop front in Salford, a city near Manchester, England, which was formerly the site of the Salford Masonry, a commercial sculptor's workshop that went out of business in 2009. In a series of anonymous posts on the ParaWatch wiki between 2021 and 2023, two users local to the area described breaking into the masonry on separate occasions, with both of them allegedly experiencing mind-altering effects inside. They reported discrepancies between their recollection, the photographs they took, and even previous drafts of their posts. The Foundation later acquired the building in May of 2023, and in October of 2024, Agent Marquez of Site 199 visited it to verify the claims made on the ParaWatch wiki. Marquez was able to corroborate many of them, but could not prove any, and also described feeling at one point as if he were recovering from a compulsion effect, which would be consistent with having been compelled to forget something. He suggested that the building housed a localized confusion effect, and 2 days later, a four-person research team went to the building, confirmed that anomalous activity was present, and recovered the heads for containment. We're then provided the research notes collected by the research team, which consists of senior researcher Nicholas Carruthers, who was previously considered an expert in Davite history prior to SCP-6140. Senior researcher Gregory Blott, who's an expert in business, finance, and anomalous economics. Researcher Lauren Shepard, proficient in international geology. And junior researcher Claire Winford, a trainee. We're first given the team's initial arrival at the Masonry building, where they arrive under the guise of building surveyors. Winford remains outside to survey the building while the others head in, each carrying a personal compulsion monitor. Arranged haphazardly around the shelves in the front room, they find 17 items that may have been for sale when the shop last opened its doors, including four small hand-carved marble statuettes, 9 plastic or resin garden statuettes and ornaments, and the 4 stone heads. 3 of the heads are high-quality portraits, while the 4th is very weathered and of low quality. They note that the 4 stone heads are intriguing, being far older than the other objects and seem more like archaeological artifacts than modern creations. The back room is in a state of neglect, covered in stone dust, and they take a sample for the geologist, Shepard. Shepard begins inspecting the heads, and eventually calls Carruthers over to discuss something. As Carruthers walks over, he experiences the sensation that Marquez described, a plunge into a cold pool of awareness from the warm embrace of unthinking routine. Although his compulsion monitor is still flat, this is confirmation that whatever they're looking for is in this room. Shepard begins explaining the details of the head's geological makeup, but it goes over Carruthers' head. She believes that three of the heads are likely portraits of real people, while the fourth is different. Based on the slope of the face, the sharp little mouth, and the flat top, Carruthers immediately believes it to be a Davite artifact. Shepard counters that there isn't a single limestone deposit in Davistan, so it couldn't be, and the stone dust on it indicates that it was recently carved. When Carruthers continues to insist, she finally suggests with frustration that if he really thinks it's Davite, why not run a thaumaturgy test? Carruthers then went back to their van and grabbed two etheric resonance imaging units, which are old tech but still usable. He waved away the others' confusion as to why he had these units in the van, but they began their thaumaturgy assessment. The field experiment log shows that there is a thaumaturgical connection between all four heads, each of which contains a much brighter array of energy at its core. Carruthers writes that this proves that the Davites were real all along, and Site-199 seems to agree, offering the SCP-8822 designation practically as soon as the word left his mouth. The connections between each head imply a thaumaturgy network, so these heads could have once been components of a ritual. He doesn't know what to make of the buildup in the center of each, though, possibly suggesting that these were used as thaumaturgical capacitors. Shepard states that there's only one way for something from the old Davite Empire to exist, and that's if it was reality-anchored during the transition. To recap SCP-6140 real quick, in this universe, the Davite Empire re-emerges in the present day, although it turns out that their modern-day form is far different to the blood-worshipping slavers we usually think of. Through a ritual, the Davite Empire of old was erased from reality, and the new Republic of Davistan appeared in its stead, a peaceful state recognized by the United Nations. Most of the world now knows only about the Republic, with consensus reality being rewritten, but certain members of the Foundation were anchored through the transition, allowing them to retain knowledge of the old empire. Carruthers was an expert on the old empire, which no longer exists. The researchers, primarily Carruthers, believe that these heads come from that previous version of reality and were somehow anchored through the reality rewrite. Unfortunately, the readings from their equipment of the local Hume levels, which measure changes in reality, seem to indicate that barely anything anomalous is going on here. Shepard wonders if they could possibly see inside one of the heads, leading Blot to joke that they could crack one of them open. The joke goes over Shepard's head, accusing him of gross negligence for merely suggesting it, and Carruthers is required to include her objection in the report. Over lunch at a delicatessen, the team discusses their next step, with Shepard suggesting that they cross-reference Agent Marquez's report to see if they can figure out what the heads' anomalous properties are. As they begin to do so, junior researcher Winford quickly emerges from the delicatessen out of breath and announces that one of the heads is in the bathroom. She says that it's next to the sinks, like it's meant to be there, and she's sure that it wasn't there when she went in. She felt that experience that Carruthers did earlier, and then when she left the stall, it was there. Shepard and Winford go back to the bathroom to go get it, and they both see it, with Shepard recognizing it as one of the marble heads. She also notes that it even is in a display case, as if it's meant to be here. She begins opening the display case to get it, although Winford exclaims that they can't do that. As Shepard lifts it out, she says that it's not supposed to be here, noting a scratch on its neck where she sanded to get a sample. When they return with the head in a bag, Carruthers asks what on earth could possibly have compelled Winford to take that. He asks if she's insane or just incompetent, as it's supposed to be in the display case in the bathroom, telling her to go put it back. Shepard tells him that he cannot speak to her that way, and asks how he even knows about the display case. Carruthers, confused, asks in turn what's happening, as he rummages through his notes. He shows his notes indicating that three of the heads are at the masonry and one is at the delicatessen. Shepard counters that she spent all morning around four of the heads, and now one of them moves here to the bathroom, and she's the only one worried about that. Blot swears, and Carruthers says that nothing has moved, as obviously the head is having some kind of anomalous effect on her memory. He wants to take a few minutes for them to go through their notes to re-sync, but Shepard refuses, as they were all on the same page a few minutes ago, so she thinks that it's their notes that are compromised. Carruthers cites Foundation protocol, as there are far fewer anomalies that affect documentation than there are that affect memory, so when in doubt, they trust the documentation until proven otherwise. Shepard, however, states that Rule 1 is to act on instinct and do what feels right, and she finds it very concerning that his first instinct is to accuse Winford of wrongdoing, when the SCP they're investigating has targeted her. Her safety could be at risk, and his solution is to tear her down. Carruthers tells her that she needs to stop and think through what she's saying, but she counters by saying that he hasn't seriously considered the situation at all. It doesn't make any sense for one of the heads to be here, and even if it was, she doesn't buy that they'd stop for lunch. Even if she's wrong, the heads can move around and fabricate display cases and edit documentation, or they can change memories. Possibly both, and both are bad. She says that they should stop immediately, call off testing, and go home. Carruthers says that their objective is to determine the right containment procedures, but she says that they already have them. These things were perfectly contained for years in an abandoned building with no one thinking about them, but they've messed that up already by giving them attention, and now one of them has escaped to a deli. All they need to do is put them in a box and forget about them. Carruthers asks the other two what they think, with Blot wanting whatever gets him home fastest, although Winford feels that stopping now would only be doing half the job. Carruthers drums his fingers on the table as he thinks, before responding that they'll put the head in the van, grab the other heads at the masonry, and then head back to Site 199. He does tell Shepard that this will be in his report, though, but she says that that's fine, and that she really feels this is the right thing to do. They return to the masonry, gathering up the four heads together in the front room. Once Winford is ready, her and Carruthers think about what kind of statement the heads would be most receptive to changing, if they were willing and able to do so in the first place. The approach they decide on is quite pragmatic, as they will ask a head a question and provide a wrong answer. They reason that if the heads are able to change text, they will do so to correct them. For the most accurate test possible, they need an objective fact that is known to be correct. He realizes that there's shockingly little they know for certain, as they don't even know what kind of stone they're made of. They write down in the log that the heads in the masonry are made of papier-mâché, and then leave the room for several minutes. When they return, they see that the documentation has not changed. They decide it's time for a more pragmatic approach, as given that their goal is to establish containment procedures, it would be wise to verify that the heads' presumed properties do not make them unusually resistant to containment. Of course, at this stage, they don't necessarily want them to know that they intend to contain them, assuming they're even aware of the statement, which may not be the case at all. They write down in the log that the Bradford heads are perfectly safe inside the masonry and require no special accommodations beyond those typical for archaeological artifacts. While waiting to see if the statement changes, Blot comes downstairs and joins them, noticing that the statement they wrote in the first test isn't consistent with how they described it to him earlier. Carruthers and Winford both reread it, and neither of them can work out what he's talking about. Blot argues that this alone could be evidence of retroactivity, but given that Davite changes have never worked like that, Carruthers shuts down the idea. With no indication that either of the tests would succeed, Blot picks up the second of the four heads and holds it above him, as if ready to drop it, leading Carruthers to call a halt to testing. Carruthers asks what the hell he's doing, and Blot says that he's going to crack one of them open, like they agreed this morning. Carruthers insists that Blot was joking, but he wasn't, and says that Carruthers was in agreement, although Winford objected to it. Winford doesn't think she said anything about it, and Carruthers says that it's insane. If they thought the heads might react to text, who knows how they might react to an attack? Blot says that his tests aren't getting anywhere, as Carruthers doesn't know anything about rock composition, so how would he even be able to tell if it had changed? Carruthers replies that they're supposed to have a geologist on the team, so in principle, the test is apt. Winford says that they tried to use some of that stuff from the geologist kit earlier, and they didn't know what to do with any of it. She doesn't think that it's plausible that he picked geology to use for the first test, but it might be plausible for someone else. Blot asks why they even have a geology kit, as that's not standard equipment. Carruthers tells them both to put a sock in it, as the details of the first test are irrelevant, and Blot threatening to smash an SCP is gross misconduct. He says that he has half a mind to boot him back to Site-91, leading both Winford and Blot to exclaim. Blot tells Carruthers to sit down, as he's calling Site-199 to report this, and tells Winford to pack up the heads. It's at this point that we need to take a bit of a break to point out some things that are happening in the article. Obviously, something is happening to the team, as now it appears that Shepard no longer exists, although there is still evidence that she did exist, despite none of the team remembering her. What's more is that the article itself is actually changing as we go along, although this is, obviously, a very difficult thing for me to convey in audio form. If we stop reading the document after the team decides to go back to the masonry after the deli, we can see that various details have been altered. It now states that all four of the heads are made of limestone, and the heads are generally perceived as more beautiful and significant than would be expected of a given observer's affinity to stone carvings. Observers report feelings of calmness, relaxation, and belonging. This has led to them becoming a household name in Bradford, UK, the city in which they were recovered, instead of Salford. It also now states that three of the heads were recovered from the masonry, and one of them from the women's bathroom of a delicatessen, where it had been on display for several years. Rather than finding out through the Parawatch wiki, it now references the Bathrooms wiki, in which eight users between 2015 and 2023 described breaking into the masonry after seeing the head at the deli. After Agent Marquez investigated the claims, a three-person research team was deployed from Site-199, confirming that anomalous activity was present. In the personnel list, it notes that Site-199's geologist was occupied with a prior engagement in Salford. Additionally, during their testing, they don't have Shepard there for her input, including mentioning that the heads must have been reality-anchored through the Daevite transition. Instead, Blot offers up his findings on the masonry's business history. It notes that the business was originally known as Cheshire Creations, registered in 1962. It moved to this location in 1965, although Blot notes that this was quite far from the original location of Manchester, and Salford would have been more sensible. The owner employed her daughter, but missing transactions suggest that there was one additional employee who isn't named, likely paid illegally. The business halts when the owner disappears, and the missing persons report remains unresolved to this day. Ownership is transferred to the daughter, who rebrands it to the Bradford Masonry, and eventually their contracts are consolidated to a Christie Moreau, who dies in 1985 along with most of the business. Customer inflow decreases to almost zero in 2008, and bankruptcy is declared in 2009. Carruthers notes that there isn't one mention of the stone heads, so he instructs Blot to go back upstairs and check again, but he insists that he's been thorough. That leaves only the assumption that the stone heads are the work of Christie Moreau, who was apparently quite the household name back in the day in these parts. They still have no idea how the heads became charged with thaumaturgic power, though. The three decide to visit the last head at the deli, although they eat their lunch there in silence. Winford returns from the bathroom, sitting down dispassionately with her arms held close, as if the air is 10 degrees cooler than it is. Eventually, Carruthers asks what the team's next step is, although the others don't respond. He asks Winford if she saw the head in the bathroom, which she did, although she doesn't really have anything to say about it. He tells her to go back in to try to find something that might help them out, so she does. He then asks Blot if he has any thought, but he doesn't. He says that last week he was making thousands of financial transactions to communicate with a sentient stock exchange, SCP-1442, and if he messed up, 100,000 people would have lost their jobs. Now, if he messes up, he drops a rock. At worst, he hurts his foot, and at best, he hurts Carruthers' foot. The two sit in silence until Winford returns several minutes later. She says that there's a head in there in a display case, surrounded by framed photos of the four heads in the masonry. It's a replica of the third one, made of wax, according to the plaque. Carruthers thanks her and admits that he was under the impression that the head here was a fifth Moreau piece, but unfortunately that doesn't leave them with much indication of what to do next. Winford pauses, building up the courage to speak, before asking why he thought there was a head here. Carruthers just replies that it was in one of the reports, pulling out notes that show the Parawatch posts, Marquez's report, and his own notes. The Parawatch threads mention both the masonry and the deli, and Marquez theorizes specifically about their relationship, but if the plaque here says that the head here is made of wax, that ought to be common knowledge. Blot mentions that Carruthers didn't know about it, and Carruthers says that all of the accounts are in consensus except for hers. As if predicting this, Winford pulls out her phone, showing a photo she took of the wax head in the bathroom. Carruthers asks how everyone else can be wrong, and Blot looks at Marquez's notes, seeing that he recommended a disruption class which should have a minimum of 4 people on the research team. Winford thought it had a different class, asking if it changed, but Carruthers dismisses this as unlikely, as there are far fewer anomalies that affect documentation than there are that affect memory. Winford says that he keeps saying the heads are from the Daevite Empire, but changing things was the Daevites' whole thing. Carruthers explains that their retroactivity came from the Chronicle, SCP-140, and those changes were vast. They were in the past and always served the eventual goal of moving the Empire's collapse further into the future, but these changes don't feel like that. They shouldn't be aware of the changes here at all. Winford asks about the idea of there being another Chronicle in the future, which would change this timeline, but Carruthers again says that they still wouldn't be aware of the changes. Blot interrupts to say that Carruthers read that there's meant to be a head in the bathroom, but there isn't one, and Winford read that Marquez put a different disruption class. He thinks that they're both right, and the documentation has changed. Carruthers accepts this, as maybe the heads are changing their documentation, but only their documentation. They'll run a couple of tests to see if they react to a few basic statements. That brings us back to the section now where they're testing the four heads, writing that they're made of papier-mâché and are perfectly safe inside the Bradford Masonry. That leads to Blot threatening to smash one of the heads, saying that Carruthers agreed with him before about doing it, and then Carruthers mentioning Site-91. Blot goes to contact Site-199 and reports this whole situation. We're provided the communication log showing Blot calling an agent at Site-199, but before we get a chance to read through it, the documentation suddenly changes, showing the caller to instead be a senior investigator named Melanie West. Let's then go back to the top of the document to see what else has changed, starting with it stating that all presented details are consistent with those presented earlier, and there are no inconsistencies. If you notice any, you're imagining it. Any transient feelings of abnormality experienced while reading this file are considered normal. The most glaring change is that there are now 7 stone heads designated as SCP-8822, referred to as the Bradford heads in northern UK British culture. All of them are exceptionally beautiful compared to visually similar carvings, likely anomalously so, which has led to their notoriety as essential artwork in the Greater Manchester region and in online circles. The most dedicated fans of 8822 spend their lives in service to them. It also states that a 3-person research team was deployed to Bradford to investigate them, from Site 91, not 199. The personnel on that team are also now completely different, with senior investigator Melanie West leading things, a level 1 telepath. She's joined by researcher Vikram Singh, whose memory is supplemented by digital backup due to neurological injury, and researcher Sally Hawthorne, proficient in memetics and counter-memetics. Singh writes in his field notes that even on an average day, the trip from Site 91 to Bradford would be long, but rush hour was especially bad today. Ordinarily, they would have been dispatched a little later with a hotel room booked ahead of time, but this was not the case today, with no explanation, and so they were all exhausted upon arrival. They entered the masonry and were greeted by one of the volunteers who takes care of the heads, who introduced himself only as Old Bob. As agreed with the volunteer group beforehand, Old Bob left the premises to allow them free rein over the property. In the shop front, they counted the 7 stone heads, as well as approximately 100 much smaller carvings of varying quality, all bearing some resemblance to at least one of the 7 heads, mostly made of wood. Having been apprised of the fact that the group of volunteers associated with the caretakings of the heads self-identify as a religious cult, they began a sweep of the Akiva field to assess the legitimacy of the faith. They find that the levels are barely above baseline, meaning that while it's possible that the heads have some religious significance, it's unlikely that more than 1 or 2 people genuinely believe so. Singh was unimpressed with the results, but Hawthorne found them fascinating, as Old Bob's presence alone should have caused a spike in the levels if these heads meant anything at all to him. At this point, West arrives with coffee for them, and she immediately freezes when she sees the heads on the table. Singh assumes that she's psychically linked with them against her will, and he breaks her gaze by hurrying her along to the rear of the building. The back room of the masonry is set up as if for a support group, with chairs and fold-up tables. Singh assumes that this was where the stone head fanatics would gather for meetings and the like. They take the time to discuss how ecstatic they are to be investigating the famous Bradford heads, with West and Hawthorne seemingly genuinely enthused at the prospect. Singh admits that he didn't find himself excited in the slightest, as he's never been into the arts, and quite honestly, he had never heard of these heads before today. For their sakes, though, he smiled and nodded and played along. Eventually, they roused themselves to get some work done, with Hawthorne going upstairs to try to find out more about the business, while West and Singh assess the heads. West picks up one of them and holds it up to her face, gazing into its eyes. After a while, Singh asks her if she's all right, and she says that she's fine, as she puts the head back down. She says that she's just getting the psychism test underway, although Singh tells her that that's not safe, as they should get some baselines measured first. They test the Hume levels of the heads and the surrounding area, finding a lower resistance to reality bending than typical matter. After finishing the test, Singh goes back to West to report his findings, but finds her holding up one of the heads again, staring straight into its eyes. He asks her what she's doing, and she puts it down, turning away from him. For a moment, despite her being nearly 30 years his senior, Singh catches a glimpse of an expression like a little girl idolizing a mentor. She says that it's nothing, but he replies that her link is betraying her. She relents and asks if he ever met Site 91's senior investigator before she took over the role. He says that he possibly did, but the data isn't on him, and he'd have to sync up his memory to be sure. She says that before the last senior investigator, it was a woman named Rebecca Douglas, something of a legendary figure in the late 80s. She only met her once and found her totally unremarkable, just someone doing her job well. After a pause, Singh asks why she's telling him this, and she smiles. She says that months later, she found out that she was actually a level 3 psychometrist, able to learn an object's history and what it thought with just a touch. She wonders what she saw in her when they shook hands, and she picks up another one of the heads. Sensing Singh's thoughts, she says that she can't ask her, as she disappeared a few years later. She only heard bits and pieces, something Sarkic and something Davite, but it was all covered up. She forgot about her for 30 years, and then in 2022, SCP-6140 happened, bringing the Republic of Davistan. West was safe and anchored along with the rest of Site-91's senior staff, so they came out on the other side unscathed. There they saw Rebecca Douglas, 30 years older, like nothing had happened. From her perspective, that was true, as without any anomalous Davite influence, she lived out a relatively normal life for a Foundation employee. She doesn't know what happened to her after that. Singh asks what the point of all that was, and if she's trying to invoke latent psychometry powers. West laughs and says that maybe she is, as who knows what psychometry could tell them about these heads. Mostly she's just musing, as something reminded her of Douglas. She reaches forward and picks up the fourth head, asking if it looks a little bit Davite. Singh writes that it didn't, as the memories he had with him at the time only had the Republic of Davistan, not the Davite Empire, and certainly not its art style. He tells her that there's a little Davistani in it, but if she thinks that it's Davite, why don't they run a thaumaturgy test? She laughs again and says that she wishes they could, but thaumaturgy is so rare these days, and they don't have that kind of equipment lying around. Singh frowns and says that she might be a little mixed up about thaumaturgy's rarity, as the Coalition and the Sarkics are very much present in this reality. She's surprised, saying that she might have been misinformed, and Singh asks her if she ever tried to find herself, her original self from this consensus reality. West is quiet a moment longer, and he can feel her thought process ticking away, trying to understand what he'd asked. She replies that it doesn't work like that, as it's a consensus shift, not a parallel universe. He begins to question this, based on what she said about Douglas, but she moves on to discussing the Hume levels. They do a psychism assessment, with West attempting to form a psychic connection with each head. She successfully forms a connection with the first three heads, although she's unable to detect any sentient presence. When she tried to connect with the fourth head, however, she stumbled backwards, hand raised to her head as if stressed to the point of injury. Singh gently reminds her that she needs to be aware of her limits, and all she can do is meekly nod. She goes to sit in the van for a while to rest, and later, Hawthorne and Singh are in the building when they hear a knock on the front door. There's a man there, who introduces himself as Mike Bergerman, a member of the cult associated with the Bradford Heads. Singh was ready to send him away, but Hawthorne convinced him otherwise, getting Bergerman to sit down for an interview. Singh starts by asking him why he's here, and Bergerman says that he's a follower of the Bradford Heads. He comes here every now and then on pilgrimage, getting to see the heads and touch them, as it's important to the followers. Singh asks what exactly about the heads is there to follow, although Bergerman doesn't understand. Hawthorne clarifies by asking, in the broadest terms, what he gets out of following the heads, such as spiritual satisfaction. Bergerman says that, to be honest, he mostly does it for his 7-year-old daughter, as she's really into the heads and it makes her happy for him to visit them, volunteer for them, and whatnot. Her mother's not been in the picture for a few years, and this has been a good constant for them. Hawthorne asks what sort of things he does when he volunteers, and he says that it's just normal church stuff. Taking shifts watching the masonry, spreading the word, putting up pictures of them. Singh begins to say that that's not normal church stuff, but Hawthorne cuts him off, asking if they have a website. He doesn't think so. They just all meet up at the Stonehead Deli on the other side of town, where there's replicas of the heads. Hawthorne then asks if he himself believes in the heads, and he jokes that of course he does, as he can see them right over there. He then says that doing this gives him a reason to get out of bed in the morning, and maybe at the end of the day, the heads themselves aren't that important to him, but everyone else seems to love them. He already said that he pretty much only does this to see his daughter happy. Singh counters that she's 7 and asks if it does make her happy. Bergerman asks in turn what kind of question that is, and Hawthorne asks him how long he's been volunteering for. Bergerman just says that he's been doing it a good long while, but he's no good with dates. Hawthorne then asks if this is his first time visiting the heads, to which he just says that that's quite insulting, and he leaves. For the most part, Bergerman's responses had left Singh little more than confused, but Hawthorne seemed like she had some thoughts percolating. They decide to go get West and head to lunch at the deli. Hawthorne says that the Akiva result doesn't make any sense, because if there is a religious cult, and there is, they must have some religious significance. They must have done the test wrong, and she wants to run it again. Singh says that the cult itself doesn't make much sense either, as they don't seem to have any organizing principles, and there's not even a Facebook group. The deli is named for the heads, and there's pictures of the heads on the walls, as well as a replica of one on display in the bathroom, but nobody here seems to care. It's not the secret cult meeting spot that Bergerman implied. Hawthorne also comments that it's weird for them to call themselves a cult. West paused for a moment, before asking if either of them were ever told the nursery rhyme about the Bradford Heads. She recites one of the stanzas of the rhyme, but neither of them have ever heard it. She says that she found it on Wikipedia while she was in the van, and the article said that it was well known. She thinks it's a little strange that none of them know it, but all they know right now is that the heads have a propensity for psychic connection despite not being sentient. That's not much to go on, but maybe it's related. Singh replies that he doesn't see how those things could possibly be related, and West agrees. She says that maybe they should have a chat with old Bob when he gets back. When they get back to the masonry, West resumes her psychism test, skipping over the fourth head to make a connection with the fifth one. Here, she detects some sort of sentience, although it's very faint. She feels an emotion of irritation, and she apologizes to it before breaking the connection. She says that there's something in that one, something that didn't like her being in there, but it was very weak. She says that the first three heads were like someone picked up the phone but didn't say anything, whereas this one was like someone breathing on the other end of the line. She picks up the sixth head then, before pausing, saying that she knows this face. She says that she's certain it's Dr. Carruthers from Site 199, one of the leading experts on the Davite Empire. They attended a seminar in Davistan about a year ago, and she says that the way he came across gave her a reason to remember him. Hawthorne and Singh aren't convinced, so she says that she'll get in touch with Site 199 to get his profile. That brings us back to where we switched off before, with West now contacting Site 199 to get information on Dr. Carruthers. The agent replies that there's no record of a Dr. Carruthers there, and it's a thorough search, of all alumni and deed polls as well. West tells them to let Carruthers know that she's looking for him, if he passes through there. She hangs up the phone and goes back to the heads, picking up the sixth one again. She tells Singh that it seems like Carruthers never existed at all, although Singh tries to tell her that he believes her, with her just calling him a sycophant. Hawthorne then comes back into the room, wearing a perturbed expression and fiddling with some device, possibly a compulsion monitor. She says that she felt something odd just now, but she probably just imagined it. West forms a connection to the sixth head, writing that it feels very similar to the last one, with something barely there. It's different, not in any specific way, just different, meaning that this one and the one in the fifth head are different entities. It knows that she's here, and she thinks that it wants to speak with her, but it doesn't know the words. There's guilt and jealousy here, but it's not the almost anger that she felt in the other head. She then connects with the seventh head, but it's even quieter and dimmer, like it's had more time to fade or maybe faded faster. This one feels a little more like the first three heads, and it's almost empty. After disconnecting, she says that there's something in these heads, but whatever it is, it's dying. The fifth and sixth heads need protecting, and she's not sure about the fourth one, but they may as well treat it like the other two. Singh writes that there's always the dark temptation in situations like these to just let these things die, that maybe the current course is the best. Working with a telepath is freeing in many ways, as the dark thoughts are laid bare, to be interrogated and dismantled, rather than buried. The three of them sat in the circle of chairs in the back room and discussed it for over an hour. They examined every detail, every bit of evidence they'd collected so far, and even though they didn't know much, Singh felt that he cared for the heads and wanted them to survive. They were interrupted by old Bob, who let himself in and joined them without invitation. West tells him that they're just getting ready to leave, and says that they did have one guest today, but he was no trouble. She then asks about his personal relationship with the heads, asking if they are personally significant to him. Old Bob says that they are, as he's a custodian of the heads, proud to stand watch over this masonry. Singh says that with all due respect, that doesn't really answer the question. West apologizes for Singh, and Hawthorne asks why he volunteers for the Bradford Heads cult. Old Bob replies that it's something to do, as he saw the work the cult was doing for the community, and he just knew that he had to be part of it. He also says that the heads are gorgeous, and asks how could you not want to be close to them. Hawthorne then asks if only someone who truly believes in the head can become a custodian, and he says that yes, of course, as it's one of the highest honors. They end the interview with Bob, and he leaves, with Singh stating that it's safe to say that they didn't learn anything from that. He suggests that they find some other members of the group to talk to, but Hawthorne then says that she thinks she knows what's killing the heads. These heads are the focal point of a religious cult, so they should have an Akiva field, and old Bob and Bergerman should have detectably reinforced it. Members of the cult gather here, make pilgrimage here, house custodians here, so the heads should always be exposed to fresh belief. Except they're not, as Bergerman just wants to be a role model for his daughter, and old Bob evaded every single question they asked. She doesn't think that either of them believe in anything at all. The Bradford heads are supposedly incredibly famous, but the three of them have never heard of them, not even recognizing the nursery rhyme. The religion is fake, a psychic projection that has hundreds of people convinced that they believe it, but no one actually does, so there's no Akiva field. The heads are starving, so that's why they're dying. Singh and West pause, with Singh out of his depth and having nothing to contribute. West finally speaks slowly, stating that her theory reflects a rudimentary understanding of the Akiva field, the mechanics of which are a tightly kept secret by the Department of Tactical Theology. If even one person were to truly believe in the Bradford heads as per a religion, there would be an Akiva field to measure. And if they've learned anything about people, it's that they're stupid. Hawthorne argues that that only supports her theory, because if the heads have been draining the field, they could well leave a religious cult with no believers. Her theory is the only one they have so far, and the heads are going to die regardless, so they have to protect them if they can. With a frustrated expression, West turns to Singh, asking what his gut tells him. Singh says that they've been asked to contain these heads, and to do that, they need more information. They've had two useless interviews, so really they don't know anything. They need to talk to more members of the cult, or anyone who's actually familiar with the Bradford heads. West takes a moment to ponder before saying that they'll go with Hawthorne's plan, but they're going to have to head back to Site 91 to have even a chance of generating any level of Akiva radiation, and even then it's a stretch. They pack up the heads, say goodbye to old Bob, and leave. At this point, the document changes again, and going back to the start, we see that the site now refers to the SDP Foundation, their motto being Secure, Display, Protect. There are also now 11 stone heads as part of SDP 8822. As a result of a virally aggressive marketing campaign, the heads are referred to in Northern English popular culture as simply the Bradford heads. Each of them are exquisitely beautiful, their craftsmanship of the highest quality, and each is tastefully weathered to some degree, with material choices that complement the vibrant emotions elicited by each. They are to be displayed in art galleries and museums in the Northern England area, with SDP 8822 stock to be rotated at least monthly. Marketing campaigns are to be run continuously to attract as many viewers to the exhibits as possible, and entrance fees are to be optimized to target major population cohorts as determined by the analytics department led by Dr. Singh. SDP 8822 are not to be displayed outside of a list of pre-approved galleries, all in the Northern England area, as this is in accordance with their expansion strategy. SDP 8822 has been a monumentally successful collection for the Foundation. The initial exhibit in Bradford's Cartwright Hall began slowly, with the first visitors demonstrating the effectiveness of word-of-mouth marketing, based solely on the intrinsic merits of the sculptures and their overwhelming beauty, bringing in more people every day. This effect compounded upon itself, increasing the exhibit's exposure to the public exponentially. The exhibit was met with critical success and widespread appeal, and the unprecedented popularity of the heads in Bradford made the local news. The Foundation was able to secure a lucrative contract enabling the display of the heads at other locations. As a result, SDP 8822 can be nearly solely credited with expanding the reach of the Foundation from Bradford to encompass most of North England. Each exhibit sees up to 20,000 impressions per day on average, with upcoming marketing campaigns looking to increase that number further. In the section under Acquisition, the text has all been redacted. Instead, we're given a handful of reviews from the heads' logbook. One person gives the heads 5 stars, writing that it's clear as day that these heads resonate with people, and even though he can't count himself amidst that cohort, he believes that this is what all artwork should strive to be. Another writes that he can't believe how famous these heads are, while another writes that the heads thoroughly blend the line between artwork and artifact, and perhaps that's part of their long-standing appeal. Other reviews mention that they don't get it, but everyone else loves them, so they're sure the heads are great, and one man has seen better heads, but these are all right. One review states that if she left a 5-star review, she would get a free Starbucks. And another says that Starbucks must be insane to be sponsoring this, while leaving a 5-star review. One review says that their son desperately wanted to come and see these after studying them in school, but once he'd finally seen them, he was grumpier than they'd ever seen him. Another review says that she was more than happy to queue to see the heads, but once she'd seen them and left, she couldn't help but feel everyone there was wasting their time. One review comments on the extortionate price of £40 to see the heads, while also stating that the heads are great. A lengthy review from a man states that while waiting in line to see the heads, he suddenly realized that he's surrounded by people with whom he shares nothing. A full-bodied feeling of depression came over him, a weight that he could never hope to lift. He felt so strongly that he has wasted his life, as he never did anything special or made something that people wanted to see. All he sees in the mirror these days is an old man, but as long as he's got time left, he's going to make the most of it. He thanks the heads, as even though he never reached the front of the queue, they taught him a valuable lesson to never stand in line again. 5 stars. In the section for the Foundation's expansion strategy, which requires level 4 clearance, they state that following an extraordinarily competent and charismatic interview by their founder, of which only written records exist, the collection continued to attract attention to the point where it was beyond the capacity of Cartwright Hall. The Foundation was subsequently contacted by the Strategic Curation Panel, a business-to-business for-profit initiative with the self-stated mission of maximizing the impact of art exhibitions. The panel explained that they had extensive experience in artistic management, including of sculpture specifically, and were willing to strike a deal. In their deal, the Foundation will retain sole ownership of SDP-8822 and are permitted to display them in locations owned by the panel, consisting of 8 galleries and/or exhibition suites throughout Northern England. The exhibits will be staffed and guarded by panel personnel, and the Foundation may rotate stock between locations as required, with items not on display being kept at any of the panel's storage facilities. Entrance fees will be split between the two organizations, with 70% going to the panel, although proceeds from merchandise sold on site being retained by the Foundation. Although they would like to be able to display the heads in non-panel-owned locations, this offer has been accepted as a cost-saving measure. Any renegotiations will be subject to discussion with their primary contact for and liaison to the panel, who is currently a Miss Shepherd. The document then changes one more time, now stating that there are 55 stone heads, and they're known all throughout Britain. The expansion strategy also now says that the Foundation intends to eventually display the entire SDP-8822 collection simultaneously, so their agreement with the panel was accepted, with the proviso that they would be allowed to display more exhibits in additional locations as they acquire them, an amendment to which the panel was reluctantly forced to agree. The page shifts one last time, now showing the number of heads to be 621, with the photo showing a pile of stone heads in storage. Alright, this one obviously has a lot of heady stuff going on with it, so it's going to take a little to unpack. The key thing here is that of the 4 stone heads at the start, only one is really special, the 4th one. This is the one that Carruthers immediately thought was Davite, and the one that immediately exhausted West when she tried to psychically connect with it. There's something extremely anomalous about this head, although it's never quite explained exactly what it is. We do know, however, that it feeds off of attention, and thus desires to spread as much awareness of it as possible. It doesn't feed off of worship, just attention. And so all the events of the article are essentially this entity manipulating people and reality in order to gain attention to itself. It's not omniscient or omnipotent, however, so it works with what it has and what it's aware of. It's in a masonry, so it's a statue, and when Carruthers comes in wanting to find a Davite artifact, he just so happens to find one, because the entity changes itself to suit his expectations and to draw more attention to it. It can alter reality and perceptions to make people interested in it, so it helps create a cult around it, even though it doesn't care about them actually believing in it as a deity or anything. Eventually, it converts the heads to be beautiful objects of art, leading thousands of people to constantly flock there to see them. Again, even if they don't care about them and are just going to get a free Starbucks. On top of this, it would also appear that the entity is converting people to heads as well, as some of the heads were strongly reminiscent of Blot, Carruthers, and Winford. As time goes on, the entity converts more and more people, with the number spiraling up to 621 and likely not stopping there. This is aided by the fact that West and her team decided to finally bring the heads back to Site-91, which allowed the entity to get a good look at how the Foundation operates. It then shifted reality, creating its own SDP Foundation out of the personnel in Site-91, a foundation dedicated to displaying it as much as possible. Unfortunately, it has made a lot of heads, and now they're constantly being rotated across exhibits, so there's a good chance that it's one of the heads sitting in that box in storage in the photo. That being said, it is still a powerful reality bender of some kind, so it's likely not going to remain in storage forever. There's also the strategic curation panel, which is, of course, the real foundation, which is quite aware of the fake foundation and what's going on. They're trying to contain things, but the situation is getting a little out of hand, and they can't really be sure where the real head is at any time. The liaison between the two is Shepard, who managed to evade the whole reality rewriting going on, and evaded being converted to a head, as she was the first to disappear from the narrative back when the heads were still in Salford, not Bradford. She's now leading the charge in the hopeful containment of the heads, probably as revenge. Anytime you're getting into reality rewriting, it's going to be a bit of a doozy of an article, and this one is no exception. Adding on to that is the fact that the article itself keeps being rewritten, and it can be even harder to follow. I can't even imagine what it would actually be like to be in a situation like that, but then again, as they say, ignorance is bliss.